Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Howdy do, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank Sample alongside Scott White and Chris Towers. Fellas, I would wish everybody a happy Monday, but there is still no baseball. I made the prediction Friday that by today's podcast we would have a season, but alas, I have that narrator voice just going off inside my head right now. If this were a movie, you'd see the flashback of me making that claim, that prediction, and then it would be like, the season wasn't announced. And that would be here on our Monday. How's everything going, guys?
The narrator voice I always think of is Ron Howard, of course, for his narration on Arrested Development. But you went much deeper there, much deeper.
Yeah, that was a pretty deep narrator voice.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever see the movie... We're going off the rails, all right. Did you guys ever see the movie Stranger Than Fiction starring Will Ferrell?
I have.
Really good movie. That's another great movie where you got a narrator. The lovely Emma Thompson. I could listen to her speak all day. I highly recommend that movie. Just if we're going to continue with the theme of narrators.
How was the weekend, guys? Everything all right?
It was good. Yeah, it's good.
Nice.
How about you, Frank?
Our normal Monday responses. I love it. Nothing too crazy. I went biking. I was just talking to Chris. I was biking around his neighborhood in Brooklyn. There are a lot of people out and about in Brooklyn, so be careful, everyone out there, if you are from that neck of the woods. But
if you're not satisfied with our responses, you'd think you'd just stop asking after a while.
I'm going to keep asking until I get what I want, Scott.
Okay. All
right. Yeah. I don't like just... Let's just wear masks, guys. It's okay to go out. I've been, you know, going. I like this thing where we're going out and you can like pick up a margarita on the street and just walk it home. But like, just keep your mask on. That's all we're asking. It's okay.
We've got a lot.
Asking too much.
We've got a lot to get into today, but I want to start with the announcement that we now have a Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. Nothing is changing. We'll still have the audio podcast on all of your favorite platforms, but we just also now have a video element if you want to watch us as well. I mean, who doesn't want to see Chris's beautiful Taylor Swift shirt that he's wearing right now?
I just like, come on. It's a thing that neither of you guys would get, but I love this shirt so much because it's a Taylor Swift shirt, yes, but it's based on a Sonic Youth album cover, which is just too hipster to even put into words.
Way over my head. Much.
And it's got cats. It's got little kitties on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have David Bowie right next to you, Chris. I feel like the next step is that you need to recreate that photo on your shirt.
I might.
I don't think you really have a choice at this point. Just head on over to YouTube, search Fantasy Baseball Today, and you should be able to find us. Hit that subscribe button and the little bell next to it so you get a notification whenever a new video drops. We'll also include the link in the podcast description so you can find it there as well. You get to see Chris's, well, I was going to say beautifully bald head, but it's not completely bald right now. And you get to see Scott's full head of hair.
Oh, yes.
And you get to see me in a hat because I will not let my fiance cut my hair. I will not let her go anywhere near me. So
now that there's a video element, I have to like, I used to just roll in here with my hair completely unkempt, you know. Not caring at all what it looked like. Because I guess I have a certain level of comfort with you guys. But now, you know, the masses out there are going to see it. I have to make it look halfway respectable.
Scott, you're not alone, man. If I show people the video elements of this about a month or two ago, I would roll up in PJs, got the hoodie on, hair looking all crazy.
I know.
Gotta look a little bit more respectable now. Today on the show, while we don't have baseball, we do have lots of news. None of it really pertaining to fantasy baseball, but we'll get into it. We have Dynasty Buy or Sell, some trade candidates in that format, and of course, your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I've already mentioned we don't have a season as of now. It is Monday, June 15th. The MLB Players Association released a statement on Saturday over the weekend. They've basically given up. They ended the statement with, quote, "It unfortunately appears that further dialogue with the league would be futile. It's time to get back to work. Tell us where and when." The MLB responded, "We are disappointed that the MLBPA has chosen not to negotiate in good faith over resumption of play after MLB has made three successive proposals that would provide players, clubs, and our fans with an amicable resolution to a very difficult situation caused by the pandemic." Wow. I thought Daniel Descalso, former Cardinal, Diamondback, and Rocky, basically summed it up very well in this tweet. Basically, the MLB, do you want half a dozen donuts? The MLBPA, no. Oh, so you want six. That's the same thing. Our mistake. How about two sets of three? Never mind. Wait. I can give you three sets of two. How's that?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's like the most recent proposal. Basically, the first, very first proposal was that like sliding scale that came out to like X amount of dollars. And then after that, they were like, no, not that one. We're going to do 50 games. Or no, it was like, yeah, we're going to play like 60 something games.
It was 75 games, but we'll pay you for, I think, 50.
60%. Yeah. And basically every single successive proposal was like, how about you play 80 games and we'll pay you for 50? How about we'll pay you 50 games, but you play 70? And it's like,
it makes no sense.
Even the most recent one, which was like, play 70 something games, 72 games, but we'll pay you 70% if there's no playoffs, 80% if there are. It was 50 games if there were no playoffs and 56 if there were playoffs. Like, it is wild that MLB would accuse anyone of operating in bad faith when they've done that over and over. It's, this whole thing has been frustrating. But, I mean, look, we're getting baseball, right? Like, that's the takeaway from that. Am I wrong? Like that?
Oh, we still don't know when. So basically, right, the players are holding the owners to their earlier agreement in March that they will be paid their full prorated amount, and that agreement allows the league to set the length of the schedule. So the owners have suggested before that if it's going to be the full prorated amount, they're only comfortable playing them for 48 games. So we'll see if they actually hold to that number. There have been reports out there that it would actually be 50 something. Either way, it's not going to be a lot. It's going to create, you know, a lot of uncertainty. It's going to make for a really short schedule and some clever development in fantasy leagues of schedule and playoffs and how that's all going to work. So, but it will happen. And I think we will know this week. This is not the first time I've said this, but I think we will know this week what kind of season we're looking at. And it doesn't sound like there's going to be much back and forth.
My question is, why were the prorated salaries agreed to based upon there being fans in the stands? I mean, it's mind-boggling. Anybody with a brain knew that we were not going to have fans anytime soon. So that part to me is just mind-boggling again. But we'll see what happens this week. There's constantly reports coming out from Jeff Passan and John Heyman, and we're looking at potentially 50-something games. We'll see what happens. Ultimately, there was another report over the weekend. This is a fun one. If there wasn't enough going on, a letter from Rob Manfred to the Yankees addressing a 2017 investigation of the team should be unsealed, a judge ruled on Friday, per The Athletic. The Yankees and their players were very vocal of the sign-stealing scandal with the Houston Astros, and rightfully so at the time, but don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. I mean, look, based on what I've read, this is a little bit different. This was an investigation that took place back in 2017 saying the Yankees had violated a rule governing the use of a dugout phone. The Yankees have appealed. This came out earlier today. They have appealed unsealing the letter, acknowledging it would cause, quote, significant reputational injury. Doesn't sound too good from a Yankees perspective. So while we don't have baseball, we do have lots of, I don't know, distractions and drama within baseball.
Yeah, this one, like, we knew the Yankees did something because they were already punished for something in the past. It was never like a scheme like the Astros, but, you know, we knew they did something that would later become against the rules. I think that was part of it, was the things that the Yankees and the Red Sox ended up doing in 2017 you know, the Apple Watch for the Red Sox and whatever the Yankees did. It wasn't like, it's kind of like Barry Bonds using steroids in the late 90s and early 2000s. Like, there was a memo, or like, you knew it was against the rules, but there was no like punishment. And so it was kind of a, we can't punish you for it kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. So look, we'll see what happens. Ultimately, Scott, do you have any, like, it doesn't ultimately matter for anything, but I just find it interesting. It's stirring up a lot of drama on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Drama that frankly nobody needs right now.
Seriously.
I guess their stance on it is that the only reason it would come out now is for the purpose of damaging their reputation, and there aren't going to be tangible consequences here other than that. But, you know, we've already seen sort of the mob lead to stricter consequences that were originally there. So I don't know. Maybe, is that something people want? The mob to decide what the consequences should actually be. That's fair to wonder too. But yeah, this is going to be something that develops further and is probably going to upset some people. And hopefully it doesn't detract from the start of the season when it does start.
It doesn't actually sound like it's going to be anything from what I understand. I could be wrong, but it doesn't, like, it sounds like the letter basically said, like, don't do that, but it wasn't nearly at the same level as the Astros. Yeah.
Apparently Adam has a take on the matter, so we'll hear from him tomorrow. He gave me a homework assignment for the weekend. I did do that. We'll reveal some of those results. I know Chris has some results, so we'll talk about those tomorrow, assuming there is no baseball season announced. Email of the day, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This one comes from Jay. Dear Mickey, Royce, Casey, Adley, and Spencer.
Well, Adley has to be the Orioles catcher prospect, Adley Rutschman.
That is correct. These are all
former number one overall picks, right?
That is correct.
Casey Mize, Mickey...
Mickey Moniak.
Moniak, Royce... I can't remember any of their names. Royce Lewis.
Royce Lewis, yeah, Adley Royce Rutschman, Lewis. And the latest member of the crew, Spencer Torkelson. This one's from Jay. Our league is starting to have discussions on how to play in 2020. We are a 12-team head-to-head categories keeper league. Keep 9+2 prospects every year. The season seems likely to be about 50 games. What are the best options to play this out? Do we convert to a points league for 1 year? Not sure it's right to change this up for the year. Do we play a regular season with multiple matchups and maybe only 2 or 4 teams make the playoffs? What are some ideas you guys have heard and like? Scott, I know that you wrote an article basically outlining everything 50 game related, and you had some potential ideas for how people should handle this scenario.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in favor of the most straightforward, don't totally remake your league solution. And that would be multiple matchups per period. I suspect it's going to be an 8-week season. If it ends up being a little more or a little less, obviously we'll have to adjust the exact number on that. But no more than 4 teams in the playoffs in a 12-team league, that seems perfectly acceptable. So you only have to devote 2 weeks, 2 of those 8 weeks to the playoffs. And then you have 6 weeks, 3 matchups each. That's going to give you 18 decisions. That's going to be pretty close to what it would be in a full-length season. And like, it still won't be perfect, mostly because of you won't have as much time for individual player performance to even out. But we already knew it wasn't going to be perfect. And this, I think, will help reduce a lot of the luck that comes from just timing of matchups. You get to play a lot of your league still. So I think that's the way I'd set it up. You get 18 decisions in there, 2-week playoff where the top 4 teams advance. But, you know, there are some wilder suggestions out there, and I think Chris in particular might be in favor of some of those.
Let's get wild. You know, it's a season unlike any other, so let's get weird. Let's embrace the uncertainty that this season is going to create. And one of the things that I really like You know, we all love the draft. It's the best part of the season. Draft two different teams and combine their scores. You're playing a third of a season. Like Scott said, you're not going to have as much time for the stats to normalize. Well, part of the way that you can get around that is by drafting two separate teams. And that way you have a more mixed player pool. You have more options and you're going to have your overall stats are going to look at least a little more normal than they otherwise might.
I'm thinking now, if you draft two different teams, you basically have to ban trading because you could just trade players from one team to your other team and make a super team, Chris.
Well, but your other team would be terrible and you would be bad. You would be averaging both team scores.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying there.
Yeah.
If you do play a head-to-head categories league, can you still do those triple headers that Scott is talking about, Chris? I know that you prefer head-to-head categories. Can you?
Sure.
You could do like you versus, you know, three different teams at once.
Yeah,
I think you can. I think the option is available. I've never tried to set it up, to be honest. I know I've set it up. Oh, well, we set it up in the 30 deep for the basketball league.
Yep.
So that's a basketball categories league. So I assume so. Yeah.
Yeah. You have two matchups every week. It comes out to like 56 games over the course of a season, which is, you know, it just takes out some of the randomness of your standard head to head league while still allowing for that matchup based approach that I think adds a lot to the game.
Yeah. And I've had a couple people have asked if you could set, if you're playing multiple matchups in the same week, if you could set different lineups for each of those matchups, which is something that would come in handy specifically in a categories league, in a points league, it shouldn't matter as much. And I don't believe you can do that. I think you just set one lineup for all your matchups, which, you know, I understand is less than ideal, but I still think it's better to have the extra results, the extra outcomes that setting up multiple matchups per week makes for.
Yeah, that's where I think things get a little bit wonky. You know, in a head-to-head categories league, you would set your lineup differently in a different matchup based on, okay, well, I don't need strikeouts here, but I need them in another matchup, right? So you would set your lineup differently, but I think it would just make things too difficult to track. So I think you just have one lineup and you can go up against two teams, you go up against three teams so that you can have as many decisions to help your record later on so it looks closer to a normal season as we could possibly get. Scott, what about the possibility of, you know, if you normally play head-to-head categories, should you just play a roto league for a season? Do you just transition into that, or
I'm not going to tell you no.
Yeah.
I think, you know, no matter what scoring format you go with, you're still going to have to deal with the random variable of individual player performance. That's not going away. So if you make enough, understanding that if you make for enough matchups, I think a head-to-head league will work just as effectively as it ever would. But you know, if it's fine to do that too. If you like really big, expansive playoffs that include a lot of teams and multiple weeks for each round, obviously that's not going to work. So if you'd rather just have a roto team considering that, that's fine. I mean, the interest level should hold steadier in a roto league than I think it would in a full length season. That's usually the downside to roto. It makes for a more deserving winner, but just people get tired of it if they're not really in contention. But you know, so much movement can happen within the roto standings in only an 8-week season that it should maintain a pretty high interest level throughout. So it's fine if you want to do it. I think I'd just rather stick with what my league is set up to be, though.
I hear what you're saying. I just feel like roto is probably the easiest scenario for this season in terms of, you know, you don't have to worry about the playoffs. You don't have to worry about doubleheaders, tripleheaders, whatever it might be. But some people don't like roto, so I get that. I was just kind of mapping it out in my head. Let's say, you know, say there's a 54-game season, 6 games per week. That gives you about 9 regular season weeks. I know that you laid it out as 8, Scott. But, you know, again, I think you just leave yourself 2 weeks towards the end for the playoffs, 4 teams instead of 6 or whatever it might be. And I think that's a way that you can make head-to-head happen. But ultimately, Chris said it best, weird season. Let's get weird, guys. Try something that you haven't tried before and see ultimately how it works out. Dynasty buy or sell. Some trade candidates in a dynasty league. When looking for a player to acquire in dynasty, Scott, this is somewhat of a loaded question here. What are some things that you're looking for?
When a player in a dynasty league, well, I mean, the biggest variable is how much it would cost to keep the player. And I understand a lot of dynasty leagues to keep every player on equal terms, so that doesn't even matter. But if there is, you know, if it's certain guys you keep for $1 and certain guys you keep for $40+, you know, that is the single biggest thing. In leagues where that doesn't matter, or if you have to, you know, you're moving on to a secondary factor, it's longevity, I think. Well, longevity and upside, they're both kind of tied in. Provenness, that's going to be a factor. You know, just the regular assessment you do for how good a player is, you just have to have a long-term focus in mind. But, you know, for the most part, it's cost. That's the main thing.
Chris, what type of factors are you looking into? Because some things that I thought about, you know, if I'm trying to, not necessarily just rebuild, but if you want to buy a player on the cheap in a dynasty league, you know, I think about post-hype prospects. I think about, you know, public perception. Has the perception of this player changed? Has there been prospect fatigue for a certain prospect? These are all things that might drive down the price on a player that we were once more excited about.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, you've got, you know, we've talked about it before, but the moment when a prospect's value for fantasy as a trade option is highest is probably right when he gets called up, unless, you know, he goes Yasiel Puig in his rookie season, that kind of taking the league by storm thing where, you know, he'll just continue to, but the best time to buy a prospect is probably a guy who got called up and struggled the off season after that happened. You know, you look at someone like Ruben Odors, who I always go back to, cause that was one that I you know, did buy coming off of, you know, a down rookie season when he was young. It's, you know, those guys who are really young, who struggle, they're more likely to come back and be a viable player. If you're talking about like a 24-year-old prospect, you know, someone like Scott Kingery coming off of his 2018, and even really right now, I'm not necessarily sure he's the kind of guy who should be a dynasty buy low, because he is an older prospect. He's probably not going to get hugely better, and he doesn't have enough time before he reaches that physical peak to, you know, really improve. I think that's the way I would look at it.
So I haven't done any meters yet here on the show. I know that you guys have a worryometer Wednesday that you normally would do in season. So we'll wait until the season starts, but let's do this dynasty trade O-meter. Is it O-meter or O-meter? Isn't that something you guys argue about?
It's yeah. I don't think we've never, philosophers have debated that going back to ancient Greece.
Just so, whichever sounds best, I think.
So if it's dynasty trade O-meter, does that sound better than dynasty trade O-meter?
I think O-meter usually sounds better.
It sounds more sophisticated. Certainly.
Yeah, I'm not a sophisticated kind of guy, Scott. So let's go with dynasty trade-o-meter. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want to buy this player in dynasty? And I'll throw a few guys your way. And if there's someone that really stands out to you, you can talk more about him. If not, just give me your where he ranks on the scale. Nick Senzel on the dynasty trade-o-meter.
I will go 7.
I was going to go 4.
Oof.
Or I am going 4. He's an older prospect. He's going to be 25 in 14 days, 2 weeks exactly from today. You know, Nick Senzel was the kind of guy who was rated as high as he was as a prospect because there was upside, but also because he was a relatively sure thing. You know, he was a college bat who had produced at a high level in the SEC. And was relatively polished and shouldn't have needed much time in the minor. Injuries ultimately ended up forcing him to need a lot of time in the minors. He only ended up with 1,028 plate appearances in his minor league career over, you know, basically 4 seasons. So, you know, all of a sudden he's drafted as a 21-year-old he hasn't really established himself as a really viable fantasy option until, you know, after 25, hopefully. That's a narrow needle to thread, I would say.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten a ton of reps yet either because of the injuries. So I'm not really sure I know who he is yet. I'll continue to buy into the hype, especially if others are giving up.
Yeah, is coming off a torn labrum, of course. So talk about injuries. It is risky to acquire him. But great ballpark to hit in, great lineup. He was on pace for 18 home runs and 21 steals last season. Nick Senzel, I think, yeah, the jury is still out. Let's see. Francisco Mejia, Dynasty Trade-O-Meter.
I want Chris to go first.
Chris.
I think that's another one. You know, he is 24.
Give us a number. A number. Don't go into your whole spiel yet. Yeah, just give us a number.
He doesn't like to give his grade to trades. He doesn't like to give his scale numbers. Come on, Chris.
I was going to say 5-2.
Five. I will admit, trading for a catcher in Dynasty is somewhat risky, but you guys have references. Adam has references. Over the final, you know, 3-4 months last season, once he returned from injury in June, Francisco Mejia looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did. I'm not sure he'll ever... Hedges is still there. Austin Hedges is still there, and he's great defensively, and it doesn't sound like... It sounds like at best a 50-50 split going in, and that just makes it harder for Mejia to really gain a foothold at a position where they may never feel totally comfortable playing him that regularly. And I mean, this is kind of, I'm assuming it's a one catcher league. People complain about the two catcher leagues and how deep you have to go into the catcher pool when you're in one of those. But in a one catcher league, it makes it so the threshold for being a starting caliber catcher is pretty high because you don't go deep at all into the catcher pool. Only as many are rostered as are teams in your league. So that's going to be a difficult threshold for Mejia to meet at this point, I feel like, though he does have the upside.
Any retort, Chris? Or I guess you guys don't need a retort because you're on the same page, right?
I think there are multiple catchers who you can say what, like the case for Francisco Mejia, you know, also applies to Carson Kelly for sure and to Danny Jansen. And I don't see any reason to make prioritizing Mejia a worthy approach given that. And I, you know, the fact that the Indians sort of gave up on him, you know, that plays a part for me too. Maybe that's not fair. But it really seemed like they had kind of, you know, lost hope with him.
All right, Scott, trading for one torn labrum in Dynasty isn't enough. So I'm going to throw another torn labrum your way. And that is Miguel Andujar, Dynasty Trade-O-Meter.
I'm going to say 6 here. And the only reason it's that low is because I'm not confident in the playing time in the near term. But I think he'll play like maybe 2/3 of the time this year, and then as some of those older players get pushed out, he'll be able to get more of a foothold in that lineup.
Chris, where do you put Andujar on the trade-o-meter? And what Scott mentioned, isn't that a reason why if you like Andujar the player, you should be trying to acquire him now? Because most people view him as, you know, there might be some worry over his playing time.
Well, I mean, it depends how much you want to use him yourself right now, right? I mean, I guess if you're a rebuilding team, it makes sense. But I mean, the longer it takes the player to get a foothold, you know, the riskier he becomes long term. So I get what you're saying. I guess my confidence level in Andujar isn't so high that I'm considering that a reason to buy him.
Chris, Miguel Andujar.
8.
8.
I would say, given the fact that he's, one, proven that he can hit at the major league level, and obviously, you know, we didn't really expect him to repeat his 2018. However, you know, he does have a skill set that should make him pretty conducive to continued success. You know, he should hit for a good batting average. If not, you know, .297. He should hit for some pop. If not, you know, 30 homers. And he's coming off a lost season, and there are concerns about his playing time. And so when you have those things, it's a thing where it says, well, his short-term value is a little lower, but that long-term appeal is still there. You know, he did hit at the major league level as a 23-year-old. So I would be trying to buy Miguel Andujar.
Chris, let's go right back to those cheating Yankees, those scoundrels. Clint Frazier on the Dynasty Trade-O-Meter.
Man, I think Scott was sort of starting to, like, put some hype on him early in spring. I would say 3. Like, he's another guy. He's going to be 26 this year. There are reasons why he hasn't been able to establish himself at the major league level, but the fact remains that what you're looking at over a 162-game pace for him right now is 21 homers, 3 steals, 254 average. I don't know how much upside I see in Clint Frazier. If someone's giving him away for nothing, which they might be, but yeah, for me, it's like a 3.
3 was actually the number I was thinking too.
Have you forgotten about the toe tap?
No, I haven't forgotten about it, but everybody's healthy again. Everybody's healthy again. So yeah. Where's the opening for Frazier? And plus, it becomes a question of how big your league is. I'm assuming we're mostly addressing the 12-team mixed dynasty league, and you only have so many roster spots. I just think a guy who is clearly running out of chances on a team that already has a surplus at all the positions he plays, I just think you could do better with that roster spot. Even if I'm not totally down on the skill set for Frazier, it's pretty apparent that the Yankees are. And, you know, it would take some kind of trade or another situation where a third of their lineup gets hurt all at once, I think, for me to be interested in Clint Frazier again.
And also, he's been pretty mediocre at AAA as well. You know, this was a really high level prospect, but a lot of it was betting on tools, betting on talent turning into a really good baseball player. But you look at his minor league numbers, and it's not exactly the most electrifying profile. And now that he's almost 26, the chances of those tools turning into, you know, a legitimate, well-rounded baseball player seem pretty slim.
Scott, another player who is currently blocked on his team is Nate Lowe of the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, to me, he's so interesting in terms of his minor league profile because he shows this blend of good plate discipline. He can walk a decent amount. He doesn't strike out all that much. And he has hit for some pop in the minor leagues. But again, he's blocked. So what do you think about Nate Lowe?
Yeah, he's blocked, and the Rays have so many redundancies. But it's different from Clint Frazier because, you know, they haven't passed up the opportunity of introducing Lowe enough yet for me to lose faith that they have faith, if that makes sense. I'm gonna put it as an 8, presuming you can get him for really cheap. Because he is not a big name, he was never a big name prospect. His prospect eligibility expired before he had a chance to become that. And, you know, there isn't a lot of buzz around him making an impact this year. So, and you know, if it's only a 12-team league, he probably is only a fringy rosterable player. But I do like the upside at a position that's getting pretty old, and you don't see a lot of long-term choices at first base right now. So I'll put him as an 8, again, provided it's a next to nothing cost.
I would say 6.
All right. That's it. Just going to leave it
there,
Chris?
I don't necessarily disagree with anything Scott said.
That's fair.
But given that he's probably a fringy guy, even if he does hit, it just doesn't make it, you know, a real priority for me.
Trade him away, Tampa. Come on. All right, Chris, I'll give you someone who I think will be a priority for you. Corbin Burnes.
10.
10.
Because he's going to cost you nothing. He's still incredibly skilled. He has a 6.10 ERA in the majors, so that's going to scare people off. He was arguably the best pitcher in the minors in 2017. And then over the last couple of years, like, he's continued. Well, okay, he was good in relief in 2018. He's been bad pretty much everywhere else. But the stuff is undeniable. Some of the best stuff in the majors, really high spin rate, good velocity, tons of whiffs. For me, it's just a question of, you know, figuring out those home runs, obviously, which was a big issue last season. But, you know, that doesn't seem like something you can't fix. I think it's worth betting on the stuff when the price is as low as it likely is for Corbin Burns right now.
Scott, an 8.82 ERA. The underlying numbers were much better. His xFIP was 3.37. And apparently his slider, one of the best in baseball. 56% chase rate, 35% swinging strike rate. What do you think about Corbin Burns?
He was throwing it a lot harder in the initial spring training. I certainly see the upside to Corbin Burns. I actually, a few weeks back, I never officially made an offer, but I was looking at the roster of the person who had Corbin Burns and was trying to think up a buy low offer I could make.
Yes,
in a 24 team dynasty league. And that's kind of the sticking point is, you know, if it's kind of what I was saying about Clint Frazier. Like these prospects who have their value has fallen so low that they're now barely draftable if they're getting drafted at all in a redraft league. I just don't see the point in making a big investment in them in the trade market. Unless your confidence is just totally through the roof, and maybe Chris's confidence level is higher than mine, but I'm only going to go like a five on Corbin Burns.
Yeah. For me, I am confident in the stuff. I want to bet on that because I think based on what we've seen, like even if he can't be a starter, I think there's a chance he can just be a high end reliever in the long run. And so I'll just bet on the sure stuff given that I'm expecting, you know, the cost will be low.
Guys, are there any other names that come to mind just off the top? Any post-hype prospects, anyone that you are looking to buy right now in Dynasty? Scott, you mentioned, you know, in your 24-team league, you were looking to acquire Corbin Burns. Are there any other names you've been, you know, scouring on teams to find and trade for?
Well, obviously, the 24-team league, the standards are much lower than the typical format we're talking about. But I'm looking at some of my post-hype sleepers here. Article came out 2 weeks ago. I would absolutely be pushing hard for Kyle Tucker right now. I think his value is the lowest it's ever going to be right now. Michael Kopech, people seem to have forgotten how elite of a pitching prospect he was coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he made some huge strides just before getting hurt control-wise. Austin Riley, absolutely. I talked just last week about how I think there's a decent chance he leads the Braves in home runs this year. Like Carter Kieboom seems to have become a post-type sleeper, right? Just because he had such a bad 2-3 weeks or whatever it was last year in the majors, but minor league track record, very consistent. The Nationals seem to have a lot of faith in him.
Let's throw Brendan Rodgers out there too. Another guy who really struggled last season, but you know, the question for me is he going to keep playing in Coors Field? Are they going to trade him? If he does get to play in Coors Field long-term though, he looks like a guy who's going to win some batting titles.
Yeah. He was drafted. What draft class was he a part of? Was it Harper's?
It was the one with Dansby Swanson, wasn't it? I believe.
He was the third pick in 2015. It was Dansby Swanson, Alex Bregman, Dylan Tate, Kyle Tucker.
Okay. All right. Good, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like he's maintained an elite prospect standing for that entire length of time. He was just so young when he was drafted and more recently, here's gotten hurt. But yeah, no, I'm with Chris. Brendan Rodgers, every time we've done a prospects only draft, and we've done like four of them during this extended preseason, I'm always shocked by how late he goes because there's no legitimate reason why his stock should have fallen. People are just tired of Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, let's take a break there. When we come back, we'll talk about some players you might be looking to sell in a dynasty league. Nolan Arenado, Frank. Have you lost your mind? We'll talk about it right after this quick break.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Alrighty, we're back here on Fantasy Baseball Today, and I teased it a little bit before the break. Nolan Arenado, is he someone that you would actually look to be selling in a Dynasty League right now? Dynasty Trade-O-Meter, Scott. I will preface this with a lot of the candidates that I chose here are, look, if you are competing in any way whatsoever in your Dynasty League, no, you should not be looking to trade these guys. But if you are looking to, as Scott would call it, retool, maybe not completely rebuild, Scott, how much are you looking to trade Nolan Arenado? 1 to 10, 10 being you want to sell him off in a Dynasty League. Where does he rank on that scale?
I have a top 150 for Dynasty Leagues, like a Dynasty Startup rankings, my top 150. I still have Arenado 16th on that list. There's the downside of him possibly getting traded out of Colorado, but, you know, 28 years old for a profile that should age really well and obviously has a terrific track record. I still have him very high, so I don't think I'd be looking to sell him. And I'd be worried if I tried to sell him that the person on the receiving end would be like, well, you're obviously just selling him because he wants out of Colorado, and they would try to lowball me. Mm. Can't be lowballed on Nolan Arenado. If you're doing this, it's because you're expecting a haul in return. And I think the only kind of dynasty format where you're going to get the kind of haul that makes it justifiable is one where you do keep players on unequal terms, where the prospects you're getting back are much cheaper to keep than Nolan Arenado. But personally, like in a dynasty league, I wouldn't trade Arenado for even Wander Franco, like in a straight up deal. I wouldn't do that.
So that sounds pretty low for you, Scott. What, like a one or two?
Oh, yeah, I got to put a number on it. Sorry. I will say, I'll say three.
Chris, 265, 799 OPS. Nolan Arenado's numbers on the road in his career. But you don't want to be lowballed. What do you do with Nolan Arenado?
I would say he's a minus five. Ooh. On the sell high-ometer, or whatever we're calling it.
Dynasty trade-o-meter.
He is someone you should be looking to buy because the concerns about him leaving Coors Field are real. I don't want to downplay them. However, the last time we saw a player of this caliber, you know, leave the Rockies at the point in career where Nolan Arenado is, was Matt Holliday. He was there for the first 5 years of his career. He was an elite player, probably could have won the 2007 MVP. I'll maintain that David Wright actually should have won that one, and it's a travesty that he didn't. Don't at me, Phillies fans. He gets traded and gets traded to Oakland in that offseason, coming off of the 2008 season. Hits 286 in Oakland. Well, that's a tough place to play. Gets traded to St. Louis. Over the next 5 years, he hits 304 with an 899 OPS. He averages 25 homers, 97 RBI. The numbers aren't quite identical to what he was doing in Colorado, but you know, you're also talking about his 29 through age 33 seasons. So it's not actually that surprising that he might start to fall off. Basically, Matt Holliday didn't really lose all that much value at all leaving Coors Field. And I think we could see something similar for Nolan Arenado. I think the skill set is very good. And the road OPS is as much a result of the Coors Field hangover, where pretty much all hitters hit worse in their first series outside of Coors Field. And that goes for the Rockies, who will be most impacted by that because they will play all of their road games after playing at Coors Field.
Yeah, so I wrote about this, and I did point out that, yes, I know what the road numbers are for Nolan Arenado. No, I don't think he's going to hit 265 with a 799 OPS if he were traded away. He's probably more of like a 280 hitter with an 850 OPS. That's a very good player. And again, this is all speculation. You don't know if he's going to get traded or not. I tend to lean towards he's probably going to be traded at some point, but Scott's right. I mean, you can't just trade him for the sake of trading him. You're probably going to wind up with some lowball offers. So if you do try and shop Nolan Arenado, make sure that you're getting a fair return. You should get a pretty good haul for someone of his caliber. Another player similar to Nolan Arenado, to me, is JD Martinez. You look at the numbers that Martinez has put up each of the past three seasons. His average season is 313, 98 runs scored, 41 homers, 113 RBI, and 4 steals. That's his average season over the past 3 years. But, Chris, he's turning 33 years old in August. He has dealt with some injuries. There's a chance that he can be the next coming of Nelson Cruz or David Ortiz, or there's a chance that the injuries catch up to him. So, Dynasty Trade-O-Meter, you're trying to sell JD Martinez. Where does he rank?
I would guess you're going to get lowballed more than he's, or for much less than he's worth. And so I would probably be keeping him. So I would say, you know, maybe a 3. You probably, like, he's probably closer to his first home run or his last home run than his first, or at least his last elite season as a fantasy player than his first. But we haven't really seen much of a decline. Like last year, yes, he was worse than he was in 2017 and 2018. However, part of that was a weird power drought early in the season. But if you actually look at the splits and you look at the supporting data, it mostly suggests that he was pretty much the same player he's always been. And so I don't think we've really seen that sign of decline from him. And it could come any time, but, you know, not quite to the same level as Nolan Arenado, but I would still need quite a bit to look to move JD Martinez.
Scott, Chris said that he thinks that you'll also get lowballed for JD Martinez. You know, if you're trying to sell him to a team that is close to competing and they think that this might put them over the edge, I tend to think you might be able to get a solid package in return for him.
I think I'm more with Chris on this. I'd give it a 4, so I'd be a little more likely to do it than Chris, maybe. But it's, you know, just seeing the dynasty startup mocks we've done, JD Martinez is one of those guys who falls like 7-8 rounds in a dynasty startup mock. Like, people are really scared of that 32 number, referring to his age, of course. I feel like, though, You get a player who's pretty unathletic to begin with, you know, not a great defender. If he makes it to 32 without any drop in skill level, then he's, I'm not sure there's room for him to lose much more athleticism at that point. Like, I have a feeling he's probably just going to cruise from here, especially since he's kind of become a perma DH guy, the way Nelson Cruz and David Ortiz, they just didn't age. And I could see JD Martinez, you know, following that same aging curve. So I'd be reluctant to give him up without a haul in return, knowing that he's, you know, in terms of what he's provides offensively and just what he's doing with the bat. It's just too much to give up without getting a serious return. And I'm skeptical you'll get that serious return. I think people who look to buy JD Martinez want to buy low on him because of his age.
All right, Scott. Let's see if I can find a player that you will rank higher than a 4 on the Dynasty Trade-O-Meter in terms of...
Well, there are some here on your list.
Okay.
There are some.
Well, you know what? I do want to get to some emails. So how about you just, who's the name?
Starling Marte.
Okay. He was the next one up. And he's turning 32 years old in October.
Yeah. And he's somebody, you know, not much plate discipline, hardly walks at all. His game is very reliant on his speed, which doesn't tend to age well. You know, the athleticism, when it fades for him, I'm not sure what kind of player you're left with. And I think just because of the premium on stolen bases, at least if it's a categories league, a 5x5 categories league especially, somebody will pay a premium for him just because of the scarcity of that category. So I think now's definitely the time to shop Starling Marte in a dynasty league. And you wouldn't even necessarily need like a haul to pull the trigger on him. You just need a couple good long-term assets. And I think I'd be willing to do it.
Chris, the other names that I have on this list, including Starling Marte, are Yu Darvish, DJ LeMahieu, Eduardo Rodriguez. Do any of those names stand out as someone you'd be trying to sell in a dynasty league and potentially someone that you think you could get something fair in return for?
I think Rodriguez is definitely a sell high, but I'm not sure how much you get in for him in return. So the name I would focus on is DJ LeMahieu. He's about to be 32. He's coming off the best career season of his career. And he's about to be a free agent at the end of the 2020 season. Are the Yankees really going to invest much in bringing him back? It's possible because of how good he was last season. But given the glut that they have, you know, at first base, at middle infield, I kind of think they're going to let him walk. And DJ LeMahieu's good. I don't think he's going to ever do what he did last season again. And if he takes a step back, he's more like an 18 to 20 homer guy, 290 to 300 on a lineup that's not the Yankees, you're probably talking about a potentially pretty fringy fantasy option, a good one, but certainly not someone who we'd be talking about as a top five second baseman or a top five first baseman, which I think he's a consensus top five guy for you at first base between the two, if not top six. It's not far off.
Let's see what we got here. Pulling up the ranks, I have DJ LeMahieu fifth. Scott has him fifth. So
both gave me a look. I know your rankings better than you do.
There you go, Chris. Scott, are there any other names similar to I threw it out for you mentioned you were looking to acquire Corbin Burnes in one of your dynasty leagues. Are there any players that you have on your teams that you're trying to sell right now if you're looking to retool that you think that you can get a fair package for in dynasty leagues?
I traded Max Scherzer in a dynasty league. Just can't feel confident he has many dominant years left. He's already in his mid-30s. Just because of the scarcity of high-end pitchers, I mean, he's one who goes in round two normally. I was able to get a really good return for him and included Zach Gallen as well as some other long-term stuff. So, yeah, I was happy to do that. Whit Merrifield, kind of along the same lines as Starling Marte. If he stops running as he gets older, what are you left with? Probably nothing that interesting. So he would be another one. You know, I singled out Scherzer, but really any pitcher who falls, any of the high end pitchers who are in that age group,
Justin Verlander, yep,
Zach Greinke, Charlie Morton, who may actually retire after this season. He's talked about it. That might drive down his value to a point you don't want to do it, but given how desperate most teams are going to be for high end starting pitching, it's at least worth looking into because you may get something really good in return.
Chris, any names for you? You're trying to trade away in Dynasty?
I mean, I think you kind of got to consider trading guys coming off career seasons like a Marcus Semien, who I do like for 2019, but he is a little older. He's not, you know, 24 or 25. It seems likely we've seen the best season of his career, and he's coming off of it. And at his age, I think you're probably okay looking to move him. And I would also consider it's riskier with the likes of Ketel Marte and Josh Bell, but it's possible those were career years for them, and it's possible that their value in a dynasty league may never be higher. So I would at least consider guys like that if I can get a real haul for them.
Risky business there, Chris. Ketel Marte and Josh Bell, little bit younger there on the spectrum, but no, you're right. Look, if someone's willing to overpay, then it look, no offer is off the table in a dynasty league. You got to be able to shop as you know as many of your players as you possibly can to see what you can get in return. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to shop and field some trade offers there. Emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. This one comes from Kyle in Tampa. Hello, George, Thomas, Abraham, and Theodore.
Those are the Munchkins.
The Munchkins. That is correct. I play in a
Chipmunks. Are they what? I messed that one up.
What?
The Chipmunks.
Oh, yeah. Are you being serious?
Yes. Yeah. The Chipmunks.
This is Mount Rushmore, Chris.
What? No, it's George, Thomas, Abraham, and Theodore.
Alvin.
I play in a Yahoo 10-man 6x6 head-to-head categories league that adds OBP and quality starts to the traditional 5x5. We drafted at the height of uncertainty regarding the 2020 baseball season amid the coronavirus pandemic, and I wanted to go pitcher heavy in the early rounds. I didn't expect to wind up with Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander as my first three picks. I also added Charlie Morton and Carlos Carrasco in the later rounds. And I have Adrian Hauser and Michael Kopech as well. Should I target safe pitchers to round up my rotation, like Kyle Hendricks, for instance, or search for upside plays, like Jesus Luzardo? Or should I consider shopping one of my aces for hitting reinforcements? My hitting core consists of Jose Ramirez, Keston Hiura, Marcus Semien, Nelson Cruz, Michael Brantley, and Starling Marte. Remember, 10-team league.
I think you got plenty of safety already. I mean, the pitchers you got, they're both safety and high upside. That's why they cost so much. I don't think Hendricks would be any safer than any of them. And, you know, you might have trouble starting him because you have so many high-end arms there. So I definitely go after the upside and go with somebody like Luzardo, especially in a shortened season where his value figures to play up even more. I don't think I'd want to shop them. I think I'd be happy with what I had.
Chris, how dare you work when David Bowie's trying to play?
Yeah, this is this is why you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel, because you can see David Bowie trying to get my attention while I'm doing the podcast.
Chris, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander. That's kind of overkill. I might look to trade one of those guys for an elite hitter.
Yeah, on the one hand, elite pitchers generally provide the best return on investment at the position. And so what I might consider would be just sticking with Cole, Scherzer, and Verlander and trying to trade, you know, Morton or Carrasco and see what you can get to bolster your offense. And then from that point, try to kind of maybe find safer starting pitchers and just kind of use that. Like, that core of those three guys is going to get you so far that it would be really hard to mess up the rest of your pitching. In which case, you don't necessarily need a Morton or a Carrasco, and you can actually go buttress your offense.
This next one's
got a really strong offense already, though.
Yeah. Well, it's a 10-team league.
It is a 10-team league.
Still, I mean, he has, you know, his Jose Ramirez, Keston Hiura, Marcus Semien, Nelson Cruz, they all have the potential to be the best at their position. And, you know, Michael Brantley, Starling Marte, even in a 10-team league, they're still must start.
Semien, the best at his position, Scott.
Who?
I mean, Semien? He was last year.
He was last year, yeah. I don't know how you could say he doesn't have
that's
that
always like a, that's always a tough because like on the scale of shortstops with upside, on the scale of shortstop upside, is he in the top five?
No.
If you just put every shortstop's best case scenario, he's probably not.
Probably not, no.
I don't know if he's in the top 10.
Not. He might. I mean, last season was really good, and that's probably his absolute upside. And, you know, there probably aren't – I don't mean – does Bo Bichette for 2019 have top five overall hitter upside like Marcus Semien was last season in head-to-head points? Probably not.
Fair enough. This next one's – what do you got, Scott?
I think there is probably a way Bo Bichette could be the best shortstop in 2020, but not it's not a high enough percentage bet that I wouldn't feel as confident in Bichette as I am in Semien. Like Semien, I'm not upgrading my shortstop if I drafted Semien for that position. I may have a need. I understand it's riskier than like a Lindor or something, and I may have a need to upgrade at some point later in the season. But just going in, I feel pretty secure with how my shortstop spot looks with Semien there.
This next one's from Ben. Dear Nick, Schmidt, Winston, and Coach.
Ah, yes. The boys of New Girl.
I had no idea what this was. I have not watched it at all. Is it good?
It's good.
Very funny.
All right.
I have... Coach was in and out. He wasn't a regular character. He had stretches where he was...
Because he was a regular on a show called Happy Endings, which, yeah. If you like The New Girl, go watch Happy Endings.
Yeah.
Highly efficient joke machine.
But between Nick Schmidt and Winston, who were there from the second episode on, I can never decide which one I like best. They're all so good at their roles. Just really good cast.
I've got nothing, so...
I think it's Winston.
Winston's like the sleeper, but I kind of gravitate toward Winston too. But like the thing is, Nick, Jake Johnson plays him. Anytime I see him in anything, I laugh. Like he doesn't even have to do anything. I just see him and I laugh. And then I think Schmidt is probably the most popular choice for the best of the three. So how do you choose? I can't.
You guys talk about Zach Gallen quite a bit, and I think this takes a little attention away from Luke Weaver. What are your opinions of Weaver, Scott?
I find I'm not drafting him much. I'm not totally confident that he's healthy. And I'm not as confident in the sort of breakthrough he was having before getting hurt last year. Like there isn't the clear explanation for it like there is for Frankie Montas, who made a similar number of starts. I think a few more, actually. Yeah, so... I don't know. Luke Weaver doesn't seem like I feel like I already have my pitching staff good to get put together by the time Luke Weaver goes off the board, and I'm not any more confident in him than I am in somebody like Mike Fultonevich, who it feels like just a coin flip at best, that they're going to be a reliable part of your rotation this upcoming season. So yeah, I tend to stay away.
Chris, I think there's top 30 starting pitcher upside there, yeah, with Luke Weaver, and he's SP 53 right now in ADP. You know, he was trying to find that third pitch for years. He kind of found it last year with the cutter, using it 14% of the time. He has an excellent changeup. He has solid fastball, but it seems like that cutter really helped him excel. It's just, you obviously have that injury risk. He missed so much time with the forearm straight last year.
Yeah. He also, you know, he did change the shape of his curveball, generating a different, I think it had more break than it did the previous year. And so, you know, that could explain some of it, although the curveball was not necessarily a great pitch for him. I don't necessarily think the stuff is there to be a high-end pitcher in the way that I think it is for Zach Gallen, who has four legitimate pitches that I think, you know, can all be at least pretty good. And so, yeah, I think you're probably looking at someone with upside in the top 30, but probably not top 15 upside. I do like Luke Weaver, though.
I think that's fair. Someone to round out your rotation, but that injury risk is definitely real. That'll do it, though, here for today on a Monday. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching on our Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.